Today is February 1st, 2017, and this is episode number 396 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I have excellent penmanship. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, I was about to totally verify your amazing penmanship.
But I don't have excellent penmanship. Yeah, it was a lie.
Well, I know, and I realized that the penmanship you have shown me, you made very clear up front, it was other people writing.
You mean some of the calligraphy I've shown you recently?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not mine. By the way, spoiler, I'm not actually a hobo or a trained engineer. Just in case you actually thought all of my titles were real.
Seriously?
Yeah, totally seriously, dude.
My reality is crashing around me.
I'm neither a train engineer nor a hobo.
Then why are we even doing this show?
I don't even know. It's like you don't even know me.
No.
I have been writing letters, though, recently.
Yeah, well.
Like actually writing, like I've been using a dip pen with a nib and an inkwell. Well, except I don't have an inkwell. I've got a bottle of ink. And so, I dip the pen into the inkwell or the bottle of ink. And then, you know, scratch, and then dip it in again. Scratch.
My dearest Matilda, the dysentery has taken mold of my troops.
Yes.
So basically,
exactly. That, by the way, is one of the most marvelous things you have ever said.
So you've upgraded from hobo to dandy.
Sure.
Tell me you wear ruffles.
When possible, yes.
Okay. I'll accept that.
Yeah. When possible.
I like when to call possible. That hobo no. formal.
But I'm serious about the dip pen thing. The dip pen. And then I recently picked up a fountain pen from the 60s. And it just like I've written with a fountain pen before, but it's been a long time. And a lovely fountain pen is a lovely thing to write with. Not so like the thing with the dip pen with the nib. The thing I like about writing. The reason why
you can parse
the about
sentence.
that I like. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I can. The thing I like about it is that it slows me down and it makes me think about each word. You know, like I go like if I'm writing on my keyboard on my Mac, I'm like, you know. You know, I'm just blasting out the words at a million miles an hour. And when I'm writing with even the difference, like the fountain pen is lovely to write with because it is aesthetically so pleasing. The friction of the pen against the paper, the way the ink flows, it's all just so incredibly aesthetically pleasing that it's just lovely. So that's why I like the fountain pen. But I like writing with the dip pen because I have to think about every letter that I'm writing, and I have to think about every word that I'm writing, and it's like burning other old neural pathways in my head,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's been a lot of fun. I've always had a penchant for archaic things and obsolete things and anachronisms. And this you know certainly falls within those categories. But it's been lovely to sort of rediscover this art lately.
That's really cool. And yeah. I have to say that part of my head is still stuck on you out in the middle of the winter as your troops are dying of dysentery and you're scratching out notes to your beloved Matilda.
Dip, 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 dip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Foley Effects by Brian.
Your Foley effects are great. And apparently my imagery today can't be beat.
It cannot be beat. Your accent was also lovely.
Oh,
your
thank delivery. You.
I just. I love you, Jeff. I love you as the sun shines and the moon rises at the night. I love you. I love you. I love you.
My dearest Matilda, Brian has professed his undying love for me. It was a beautiful moment, except for the scurvy. Yours, Jay.
Oh, that's good stuff, man. That's good. That's
and that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
We should just call it there. We should drop the mic and walk.
Yeah,
but instead, let's talk about Apple's earnings report.
Yeah, and we should also remind Blue Apron
is our sponsor.
Yes, you read my mind. Blue Apron, they're awesome. They're a sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At least for today.
They're yeah. It's too late. We already got the money, folks.
Ha ha.
Yeah, we're good today. No, but they're paying the bills today.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily awesome. It means a lot to what we do here at the TMO here on the Context Machine and at TMO in general. So thanks to them. So Apple announced, speaking of earning piles of money. Well, that's right. I was talking about us. I wasn't talking about earning piles of money. But speaking of earning piles of money, Apple earned piles of money. They turned in a record quarter for December yesterday.
That's pretty awesome.
Like, yes, it is.
Like, what kind of numbers are we talking about, Brian?
Oh, I didn't pulling guys, I didn't. Okay, right. So I just pulled up the article. It was a record December quarter, $78.4 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Beating Apple's own guidance, which since Apple stopped sandbagging about 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The Apple is normally right within its guidance. Apple was just above its guidance of I think 78 billion was the high end of the guidance.
So they totally nailed it.
Totally nailed it on the revenue side. On the earnings per share side, Apple nailed it, $3.36, which mm-hmm. was up year over year and beat Wall Street consensus estimates of $3.22 is what Wall Street was expecting. But there's an asterisk.
Tell me about the asterisk.
Apple's actual profits were down 3% over year over year. So Apple did not set a record for earnings. Apple set a record for earnings per share, but not for earnings. And how is that possible, you may ask?
I may ask. Brian, how's that possible?
It's possible because Apple bought back a crapload of shares during the quarter. Part of Apple's larger, ongoing, already existing shareholder return program.
Okay, so when they buy back these shares, they don't let them go back out again. They're just in Apple's coffers, and that's the end of that, right?
Right. Yeah. When a company buys back its own shares, those shares are no longer in circulation, right? And it just means that the company owns more of itself.
All right. So does that increase the overall value of the shares that are still out in circulation?
Yes, because as shares get retired from the market, that means there are going to be fewer shares for sale, which puts upward pressure on any stock. This is, you know, like financing 101. And The company's market cap, it actually can lower the company's market cap, by the way. If the number of shares decreases more than the price per share increases, it would obviously make the company's market capitalization lower.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not necessarily a bad thing one way or another. I mean, the reality is that's all going to work itself out. But what does for sure happen is that any earnings per share are going to be higher.
Okay.
If you earn $1 million in profit and you have 1 million shares outstanding, right? That's a dollar a share.
Okay.
Right. If you earn $1 million of profit in profit, but you have bought back 100,000 of your own shares, that's going to be, is it $1.11?
Let's go with that because I really don't feel like doing math right now.
I do.
Of course.
Yeah. $1.11. Hey, I nailed it. $1.11. It's $1.11 per share, even though it's the same $1 million. Which, by the way, is why Apple, in its press release, talked about earnings per share instead of earnings, which was, in my opinion, a bit shady, but whatever.
Is it shady or is it just...
It's marketing, but, you know, come on, no one's going to be fooled by that. I mean, like, you know, Apple usually announces its earnings. And this time around, they announced their record earnings per share, and the press release didn't actually even have anything about earnings. I'm going to now check that just to,
because that's how you roll.
That's how it'd be. Wouldn't it be nice if how I rolled was to have checked it before we did the show?
Do people actually do that?
Earnings. Earnings were not in this particular press release.
Interesting.
It is super interesting. I'm checking. Aha. Previous quarter. The company posted quarterly revenue of $46.9 billion and quarterly net income of $9 billion, or $1.67 per diluted share.
Mm-hmm.
This particular quarter, the company posted an all-time quarterly record quarterly revenue of $78.4 billion, mm-hmm, and all-time record quarterly earnings per diluted share of $3.36. No mention of net income. None.
So they're not doing anything wrong per se, because they're still offering true information.
Yeah, but it's just annoying.
Yeah.
And those numbers are released elsewhere. Right? I mean, it's not like Apple's trying to Apple hiding this. They're just, by not talking about the breaking pattern. You know, one of the things I do is
they are so not breaking pattern. Not at all. They are doing exactly what they always do, which is control the message.
But Apple always mentions its net income. Always, always.
It's been in their best interest prior to this earnings report.
Not necessarily. It's not like the previous quarter sucked for Apple. For any other company, it would be like, oh my God, you know, we're like the best company ever. But for Apple, it sucked. And so by mentioning $9 billion, which was down year over year, I mean, that didn't help Apple. So one of my gifts and curses in life is noticing when behaviors change, mm-hmm, noticing patterns that change. And it like, for instance, when Tim Cook started going into salesman mode a year ago.
Man, you picked up on that like immediately. He was a couple sentences into talking and you were saying, oh, he's in salesman mode.
Yeah, he just had this completely different demeanor about him. And it was because he was trying to sell what were not good results for Apple, for any other company, it's, oh my God, our dreams have come true. But mm-hmm. for Apple, there were not good results. And that happened for four quarters in a row. I mean, maybe the whole year. It was happening for the whole year. This time around, he was not in salesman mode. And guess what? Apple had a great quarter.
Yeah. And you noted he wasn't in salesman mode so fast after he started talking.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Jeff.
Yeah. I notice that you notice these things.
Yay. It's all about me.
Hooray.
Hooray. So I think it's a little bit shifty to not mention net income for the first time and only mention earnings per share. Because, you know, I would imagine that the vast majority of journalists aren't necessarily going to notice that sort of thing and probably right. won't care. But the reality is that I was able to more quickly get people did notice the actual net income. I mean, so in like net income, what was actual net income? Net income was 17.9 billion, which is down 3% year over year. Still amazing. And we're like, you know, it's so much money.
Now, would it have been a net increase had they not bought back so many shares?
No.
Okay.
No. When Apple does share buybacks, that money is not coming out of the math of what they did that quarter.
Okay.
Right. I mean, that's not how quarterly results are determined. Quarterly results are regulations stipulate how to determine quarterly results, and quarterly results are, you know, like this is what we sold and this is what we spent selling it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is how much we spent on labor and this is how much we spent on capital expenditures and you know, this is how much we spent on marketing and parts and, you know, things like that. Right. That's what determines your profits, not giving money. Like, you know, like if Apple wrote every shareholder a check for $100, that wouldn't change how much profit the company had earned.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. So, but Apple did return $15 billion to shareholders during the quarter. That's so much money.
That's more money than a lot of companies make in a year. And that's what they gave back to shareholders.
All of the companies make in a year. It's like, wow. It's like $15 billion more than Amazon has ever made. Oh, I kid Amazon because I hate your business model.
And yet I do so much of my shopping on Amazon.
So I do too.
You know, if the local businesses would actually carry stuff, I would buy local.
Yeah, but you can't. I mean, there's so much that is good about Amazon. Okay, listen, yeah. We're not talking Amazon today.
Oh,
we're not talking. I don't really. All right, let me walk back. That's a phrase, by the way, we're going to be hearing a lot over the next 4 years. Let me walk back my statement on Amazon. I don't hate Amazon's business model.
Are you about to give me alternate facts?
No.
Okay.
These are facts. I do, however, have major worries about some aspects of Amazon's business model. Okay, there. Mostly pedantic.
All right, that's fair enough.
Mostly. I'm mostly. So let's see here. What do we? Apple had an increase in iPhone sales. Again. Yes. Which they hadn't.
So Apple releases a new iPhone that people think is really cool, and they buy it.
Yes. 78.2 million units.
That's a lot of iPhones. Mm-hmm. You know, what, average, one of those is sitting on my desk right now.
Yeah, mine too. No, wait, is that true? Yep, it's on my desk. Thought it might have been in my hoodie pouch. I'm wearing a hoodie, by the way.
Of course you are.
Yeah, it's chilly.
It's part of your standard business wardrobe.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. That and flannel pajama bottoms. And Apple's ASPs for iPhones increased to $695. And that was on because the Apple sold a lot of iPhone 7 Pluses. Apparently the 7 Plus was quite successful.
I can see why. It has all the cool brand new features. And as long as you're okay with the big screen, or if you want the big screen, man, that 7 Plus is really enticing.
Yep, and the portrait mode camera is pretty darn good.
Yep. If it wasn't for the bigger screen, I would totally have one of those.
Yeah, I wish that camera was on the 7. I hope that it's going to be on the 8 or the 7S, whichever is released this year.
Yeah. I hope that too.
I hope.
So they sold a ton of iPhones. That's great.
They sold a lot of iPhones. iPhone revenue, I think, was 70% of the company's revenue this year, this quarter. It's a lot.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and it's a big percentage, too. It makes, you know, Wall Street is always concerned about the Apple's reliance on iPhone for revenues. And it is a legitimate concern. Historically speaking, any company over-reliant on any one product for its revenues is subject to having revenues fall if something happens with that product.
Yes, but Apple's a pretty savvy company, so they're working on other products.
I'm not saying I mean, it's possible that Wall Street overpenalizes Apple for that, but there is it is legitimate for Wall Street to be concerned about an over-reliance on iPhone for revenues. That is a legitimate, sound basis for concern. Now, what you do with that concern, how much you penalize Apple for that, is another story. That may or may not be sound, rational, legitimate, whatever. But having that concern, raising that concern, having that in your mind when you think about what Apple is worth, absolutely has a foundational basis in reality.
Sure. And for now, Apple is bringing in gobs of money because of the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We also saw a 1% increase in Mac sales.
All right. So on one hand, that doesn't sound like very much, but
it's better than the previous three quarters when Apple saw year-over-year decreases in Mac sales.
So is it safe to say maybe there's a correlation between the uptick in Mac sales and the fact that brand new Mac came out?
It's funny you should mention that, because Apple did this really weird thing, this one weird trick for increasing Mac sales. They released a freaking new Mac during the December quarter, the somewhat controversial MacBook Pro.
Yes, with Touch Bar.
With Touch Bar. Oh, and MacBook Pro. MacBook Pro and MacBook Pro with Touch Bar.
Yes.
Mostly banana.
Well, the one that I care about sitting on my desk, Touch Bar.
Yeah, right. And you actually like it, don't you?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I'm pleased with the battery life. I'm pleased with the performance. And Space Gray on the MacBook Pro like this. Sexy.
It's good. I say somewhat controversial because it was criticized as being overpriced, and the RAM options people are cranky about. Pros are cranky about.
Yeah, some pros are cranky about.
Pros.
I'm fine with it. I consider myself a pro.
Yeah, you are a pro.
And I'm fine with it. If they'd been able to do the Kaby Lake processor, which means they could have done the 32 gigs of RAM.
Or if they hadn't insisted on making it so thin so that they could put enough battery in it to support the processor that did allow them to put more RAM in it. That's my crankiness here. That's why I'm critical of this thing. The thought that it is okay for Apple to only support 16 gigs of RAM because the processor they used can only support 16 gigs of RAM is only acceptable if you completely ignore the fact that there was another processor that Apple could have used, but that would have required a lot more space for more battery to provide the kind of battery life that Apple wanted to provide, and that Apple chose instead to favor thinness over practicality on its Pro device. That's where I get cranky, Jeff.
You haven't held this laptop.
Well, that's not the point.
I'm aware of that, but dude,
that's not the point at all. That's not the point at all, man.
The thinness.
I know it's glorious and wonderful, but it's not. It's not. It is. It is a compromise on some Pro features.
Yes, and the Kaby Lake model will come out in 2017 that supports 32 gigs of RAM, and then I'll have to decide: am I going to sell my still relatively brand new Skylake Touch Bar MacBook Pro and buy a Kaby Lake version?
Mm-hmm.
And if these are the worst problems that I have over this year, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, regardless of what's making you cranky about this computer, I really like it.
The point is that Mac sales were up, and that was on the strength of the MacBook Pro. This same device. It clearly has found some success in the marketplace, and I think that it bears noticing this one weird trick for increasing Mac sales, which is to release a new freaking product, right? So it's like maybe Apple could consider doing that for some of its other Macs. Maybe Apple could consider releasing a new Mac Pro, maybe a new iMac, maybe a new MacBook or a MacBook Air, or maybe go ahead and pull the MacBook Air off the market if you're going to just ignore it, or maybe even a new Mac Mini. Maybe that's something Apple could consider, and maybe some it would have that bizarre effect on the rest of its Mac sales.
Yeah,
where they would be up.
I'll grant you the iMac that needs to come out. I'm pretty sure we're not going to see any more Mac Minis, and
well, then pull them off the market.
Yeah,
because what's being sold is an embarrassment.
Yep, and holy crap, the Mac Pro. Apple just needs to go ahead and put on their big boy pants and just pull it off the market and call it good.
No, what Apple needs to do is they need to make a Mac Pro that is a suitable machine for Mac professionals and allow it to be a loss leader.
Do you really think that's going to happen?
What I think is that we're going to see a new Mac Pro this year, because I think that Apple would have pulled it off the market.
I hope you're right. I'm worried that the message Apple is sending is that we make a pro level computer and it's called the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. It is a pro professional computer as long as you're not looking for ports, processing power, or RAM.
Nonetheless, message Apple is sending.
Yeah, I hope that that's not the case. Yeah, so I think that we're going to see some kind of new Mac Pro, probably with a different form factor that is more conducive to professional use.
Oh, I hope so. I really hope so.
I hope so. I mean,
if nothing else, it'll make it so we don't have to listen to John Keat go apoplectic almost daily.
Are you just meeting John Key? You don't think he'd find another reason to go apoplectic about things?
Oh, he totally will. He totally will.
Of course
he will. Also, course hi, he John.
You know, he and I are working on a podcast.
That's pretty cool. I know a little bit about it. Wait. Brian, you and John are working on a podcast? That's amazing. Tell me about this.
It's going to have a little profanity. By which I mean it's going to have a lot of profanity.
Well, John Keat.
John Keat, yeah. He insisted on that. So I'm not going to hold back. I mean, I've always been very keen on offering family-friendly shows. But if the precept going into it is that it's not going to be family friendly, then I won't bother hiding my true nature, which is to be a potty mouth.
Wait,
it's going to be tech and pop culture both.
You're potty mouth.
I know. When John met you, I think I've heard him mention a dozen times, at least a half dozen times, how weird it was hearing you use profanity, because he never hears you use profanity. I of course do, because I know you outside of podcasting.
that's true. You do.
But John didn't. And it's funny how often he mentioned how weird it was to hearing you use potty mouth words.
You know, that's actually really funny. There was one time where I did use profanity on a show.
Yeah,
it was Angry MacBastards back in the days when that was on, and they had me on as a guest one day, and they really, you know, and they're all just swearing like sailors, and I'm just being my normal on show self, which is you restrict the words you use so that you're speaking appropriately.
Yeah, for a family friendly audience,
right.
And so, you know, people can listen in their cars,
they
or, you know, in the house or whatever.
Right.
Because there are plenty of people who don't like to hear profanity.
Well, they poked and prodded to try and get me to say one specific word. And so finally, I just said the word for them. And it pretty much ended the show right there. They had no idea what to do.
Well, see, you know, I'm glad you brought this up. And believe it or not, folks, we had no idea we were going to be talking about this. We didn't prep this. Neither John nor I want any kind of artificial stickiness. That's not the idea here. John just wants to be free to be John. And John is a foul-mouthed rantaholic. John lives to rant.
He kind of does.
He absolutely lives to rant. And so John just wants to be free to be himself. And that's fine. So we're not after stickiness, but you know, and it won't have the family friendly sticker in the podcasting. So people who avoid family, adult language shows will, you know, they won't need to listen to us.
And it's cool. And I kind of talked over you earlier, so people may have missed what the theme of the show is going to be.
Yeah, I don't want to announce the name of it yet, because we've got a name and I like the name. The name is fun, but it's going to be about technology and popular culture both. So it's not going to be just a tech show. Like, we want to be free to talk, or John wants to be free. You know, I'm letting him shape them. I have plenty of other podcasts going on. So anyway, he wants to be able to talk about, you know, movies, books, music, as well as technology.
I'm so looking forward to hearing the show.
Yeah, it should be fun. It should be fun. We did a test show. I'm told that we have a good chemistry going. And I think that's been the case on the podcast we've done too. So yeah, it should
be really good.
It should be good. So in the meanwhile, why did John come up? Why did the podcast come up? We talked about John. There was a reason for it. I was ranting about something about Macs.
And I said that that maybe Apple releases a new Mac Pro, and then John wouldn't rant about the lack of a Mac Pro. And you said, no, he'll still rant. He'll find something else to rant about.
Check out this line of reasoning.
Okay.
A reason for Apple to not make a Mac Pro is that it doesn't make a profit. Right?
Right.
Rightly or wrongly, that is a reason. Now, I believe that the Mac Pro is a loss leader, meaning that it has value to Apple above and beyond its direct profit. It's not my decision to make, of course. But I'm referring to, and we've mentioned this before, I'm referring to things like that, you know, when you see every musician on the planet using a Mac, when you see Macs in recording studios, right? There is value conveyed to anyone seeing that and noticing it. When you have TV shows and movies where every cool computer that someone is using has an Apple logo on it, right? Doesn't always have a Mac interface, even if it has an Apple logo, but they usually even have Mac interfaces. Mm-hmm. That is enormous value to Apple from an advertising perspective. And one reason why Macs are in TV shows and movies is because the people making them are Mac users.
Right. Yeah. In many cases, they need a computer on set, you know, just as a set piece. And they'll just take one of the crew's computers and put it in the set. And yeah, it's a Mac.
Not only that, but we're talking about fans of Apple's products. And they want to show off the Macs because they like Macs more than they like PCs. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the thing here. Apple doesn't pay for that. Apple does not pay for product placement. No, Microsoft pays for product placement because Microsoft has to. Right? Dell pays for product placement because Dell has to.
Man, some of but the Microsoft Apple product doesn't. Placement that I've witnessed was so painful, where it's like the show is going along and suddenly stops, so two of the actors can do this very contrived exchange about a Microsoft product.
Yeah, it's really ham-fisted and gross.
Oh, it's horrible.
Really ham-fisted and gross. I saw that on Castle, which was one of my favorite shows before it went off the air. Mm-hmm. Saw it on Castle a couple of times, actually. It was really, really gross. It seemed like it was usually procedural shows, didn't it? Or cop-oriented shows?
Yes, typically on cop-oriented shows. That's
yeah. So anyway, these things have value to Apple. And if Apple is not going to make a machine that these folks can use, Apple is going to lose some of that product placement. So I mean, this to me is a fact, and that these facts, and don't get me wrong, I know that Tim Cook is smarter than me. I know that all the executives at Apple are either smarter than me or they're smarter than me, and they know a lot more about what the hell Apple is doing than I do. I get that. I understand that. Okay, but from, you know, all I can do is make the best judgments and observations that I can about Apple with the information I have at hand. And to me, the Mac Pro has a halo effect, and that Apple should put a Mac Pro out, that whether or not it makes money, and it should be an awesome machine.
You know, if it's really awesome, it could make money.
Right. It could make money. Plus, you know, and I've always, I've said this for years, that the people designing iPhones are not going to use PCs like they're some kind of animals, right? They right. need Macs to make iPhones and to make marketing campaigns for iPhones. Mm-hmm. So I've not been worried about the Mac going away, but I do worry about it being pushed more and more to the background, and that really annoys me. But so here's my new thought. I've ranted and raved about most of what I just said plenty of times before, but here's my new thought.
Okay.
That a reason to pull the Mac Pro is that it doesn't make a profit. If that is the reason to stopping development on the Mac Pro, continuing to sell it cost Apple money.
That's an interesting question.
So the fact that it hasn't been pulled from the market, I mean, like the fact that it hasn't been pulled from the market, to me indicates that Apple is going to replace it at some point. Because otherwise, mm-hmm. just stop selling it. Because each one sold at this point is probably costing Apple money, because they're selling in fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer numbers. Why? Well, because it's a 3.5-year-old design.
They may still be making money off of
high prices.
Yeah, they never lowered the price. So and over time, the cost to make a product goes down.
Yeah, but you've got machinery and maintenance, and Apple, that these are made in Apple's own factory in Austin. Mm-hmm. Right. That means that machinery isn't being put to other uses. the space isn't being put to other uses, and the employees making it aren't being put to other uses.
To the best of our knowledge.
To the best of our knowledge. It's possible that Apple is actually, you know.
Yeah, Apple may be using that facility to experiment with other production styles.
Yeah. It's possible. It's possible, but I don't think that's the case. So there's a lot, and don't get me wrong, you know, labor is not the most expensive thing going into to a Mac. It's not even the most, it's by far not the most expensive thing going into an iPhone. So, but I can't imagine that Mac Pros are, if anything.
Yes.
Costing, what am I trying to say? Selling, I guess I'm kind of losing my train of thought. So I'm going to come back to my central thesis here, which is that if Apple is ceasing development of Mac Pro because they don't sell enough to make any money.
Where are they still selling then, it at all?
Yeah, then pulling them from the market makes the most sense. And the fact that they're not pulled off from the market means to me that Apple is going to replace it. So that gives me hope that Apple is going to do something this year with it.
I hope you're right. And I hope this isn't just another case of the Thunderbolt display where it just hangs on and on and on.
And well, it's already done that. It's 3.5 years old and it's there.
Right. But then the next part of the Thunderbolt display was Apple just quietly made it go away. But the fact that it hung on so long gave us hope that there was a replacement display in the works.
Yeah, it's really weird to me. Why? Okay. All right. We've talked about it. All right.
You could always write another letter to Matilda. Tell her about it.
Matilda, I write you today from the swamps of Greater Estonia, and I tell you that I wish that I had you in my arms. I burn for you a fiery passion that not even the harshest dysentery can chase away.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Blue Apron.
Yes.
I'm excited about them. You know what I'm excited about? I get some more
because you're hungry.
I am hungry, and I get some more Blue Apron this month, and I'm pretty stoked about it.
So do I.
You do, as a matter of fact. So, in fact, what are they doing? They're doing. We've got the upcoming meals. We have cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarin and jasmine rice. Roasted pork with apple walnut and farro salad. We've got crispy barramundi. Okay, so
do you know what Blue Apron is?
Does? It's a fish.
Yes, it is.
I've avoided fish for most of my life because I've had issues with fish in the past. I've been
like
pushing
they beat
my
you up in school
fish.
Or something.
Yeah, I think I had some bad fish when I was a kid. I don't really, but that's not the point. The point is that I decided last night that I'm getting the crispy barramundi because I'm going to try it.
Because
I'm
fantastic.
Pushing some boundaries. Yeah, and that's one of the things I love about Blue Apron. This is what they do. They deliver stuff for you to make meals, the exact things you need to make a meal,
and it's all fresh ingredients.
Did you
know they're all into sustainable farming and fishing?
I did. In fact, they have partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S.
They do.
It is good. It's good, and I've gotten meals from Blue Apron, and the stuff is really high quality.
It really is. This is a little thing, but for me, it's actually a big thing because, you know, I'm a print nerd. The recipes they give you, mm-hmm. the stock that it's on, it's like this really good quality glossy stock with beautiful four color printing images so that you know professional photographs showing what everything looks like as ingredients shows what it looks like as you go through every step.
And I'm keeping them for a recipe nice. Book. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a full page. The step-by-step instructions are great. The picture showing you where you should be at each step is great. The directions are great. And the recipes themselves are easy to follow. And I have learned cooking from my Blue Apron meals.
Yeah,
I have increased my repertoire of what I can cook from my Blue Apron meals.
More meals for your dearest Matilda.
Indeed. And that's what I love about Blue Apron. I also like the meals that I get. I mean, like, so one of the things that's coming up, udon noodle soup with miso and soft boiled eggs. I'm going to make that, man.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
Udon noodle soup. Roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad. Sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does sound really good. And knowing the quality of the ingredients that they ship you, I have no doubt those are both fantastic meals.
Yes.
How much did they cost?
Agreed. Brian? Well, what they cost is a bit less than $10 per person per meal. And here's the deal. If you try them through us, you're going to get three meals on your first order for free.
That's a pretty sweet deal.
It is a free food.
I actually bet the only way they could make it better is if they give you free shipping also.
Guess what? Guess what, Jeff? They do free shipping too.
No.
Yes. Yeah, it comes right. It's great, man. It comes right to your door, and it's in an insulated bag that has ice packs in it to keep everything fresh.
Yeah,
it's great, man. I just love this stuff. So all you have to do is go to blueapron.com/ACM.
blueapron.com/ACM. Got it.
That's blueapron.com/ACM. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. It's blueapron.com/ACM. Three of your first meals on your first order, free.
That's really awesome. Hey, thank you, Blue Apron. You guys rock.
Yeah, and thanks for sponsoring us. We would love it if our listeners went and showed them the same kind of love that they're showing us by sponsoring us.
That sounds wonderful.
It does. blueapron.com/ACM. So I thought for our last segment of the show.
Yes.
That we could have some fun with Apple numbers.
I'm in. You started right. Doing this yesterday.
I did start doing this yesterday. Yeah. It turns out that Apple has $246 billion saved up.
$246 billion. That's insane.
Yeah. $246.09 billion saved up in the bank, in the piggy bank, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be over a trillion pennies, by the way.
That's a lot of pennies. Right?
That would be 10 trillion? 20 trillion pennies? Am I getting that right? You add two zeros? Boom, boom.
Oh, yeah. 20 trillion pennies. Yeah, 20 trillion pennies.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's a lot of copper.
Yeah, there aren't that many pennies.
It's also a lot of nickel. Do you know they actually make them out of nickel and then layer copper on top?
Yeah, there's almost no copper in them anymore.
Yeah, because they'd be worth a lot more than a penny if they were solid copper. But that's not the point.
They still cost more than a penny. It's not the point. Rabbit holes. So most of this money, first of all, is offshore. It's never been onshore. Apple doesn't offshore its profits. It just doesn't bring them in.
Right.
Right. So that's roughly $231 billion. I think it's $231.3 billion is being held outside the U.S. It's probably going to end up coming back. Some of that money will probably come back into the U.S. this year because the Trump administration has indicated an interest and willingness and desire to revamp the corporate tax code. Actually, what? President Trump wants to make a corporate tax rate of, I think, 15% down from 35%. I forget the specifics. He wants to be really aggressive with that. I doubt that'll end up happening, not even with a Republican-controlled Congress, but the Republicans and some Democrats want to make it possible for some of the $2.5 trillion being held outside the U.S., to come back into the U.S.
All right.
With a tax holiday.
So that means Apple could bring in gobs of money.
Yeah, Apple has almost 10% of all that money being held offshore. by, you know, all of the corporations, all of the multinational corporations. Apple has like 10%. It's just crazy.
All right. So what's the fun thing we're doing?
Well, the fun thing is I thought we could actually look at this money and talk about some of the things that Apple could do with it.
Okay. Important things.
Well, so yeah, important. Well, actually, we can start off with a slightly different angle. If Apple's cash holdings were compared against the gross domestic product, GDP, as you might have heard about it, referred to, it's usually, yeah,
people
usually
in the know.
But people in the know. If you look at the GDP of all the countries, Apple would be the 62nd largest country, according to the CIA World Factbook. Sandwiched between Denmark, which has a GDP of, GDP of $264 billion, and Sri Lanka, which has a GDP of $237.8 billion.
Both very nice places, I hear.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, yeah, every place probably has issues, but anyway, I just fixed my typo. It's kind of not reasonable to compare wealth to GDP.
Still, it's fun because we get to talk about Sri Lanka and Denmark.
It's true. And it, you know, it contextualizes things. I mean, you know, Apple, there are 61 countries that have a higher GDP than Apple has money. And then Apple has more money than all the rest of the countries' GDP.
That's insane.
Yeah, and a growing number of, like, if you stack up all the bottom countries, and I didn't do that, and we don't prep for the show, so I didn't, I still didn't do it. But Apple has more money than a growing number of the bottom countries.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't, and I don't, it would have been fun if I'd done that math, but whatever. That's right. So one of the things, yes.
I was just going to say, it's okay that you didn't do that math because you did some other math.
I did some other math. If Apple earned 1% annual interest on its cash, which it doesn't, because right now it's really cheap to borrow money. And when it's really cheap to borrow money, that means you don't make any money on the money you have. Okay. Still, if Apple was making 1%, again, it makes probably a little less. But if Apple was making a 1%, that would be $2.46 billion in pure profit every year. That's $615 million every quarter for having money.
Matt, there are a lot of companies that would be happy to actually see that kind of a number.
There are companies that where people's dreams would be wildly coming true if they were making $615 million every quarter. Now, Apple is probably only making a mere $500 million every quarter on its investments.
Slackers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, half a billion. It's just, but the, you know, crazy numbers. So then I realized, that if Apple took all its money, what it could do if it wanted to would be to buy
stuff.
Amazon Echo Dots. You can buy stuff like Amazon Echo Dots. And which means that if Apple was going to spend all of its money on Amazon Echo Dots, it could buy 4.9 billion of them.
And then maybe Amazon would finally turn a profit.
Maybe Amazon would finally turn a profit. They'd finally be able to make up the loss on everything in volume. And then Apple, the really cool thing is that Apple would then have all these home automation devices. And it could stick some Apple stickers on it, Apple logo stickers, and then finally have a home automation hub.
That's so crazy. It just might work.
Most of the Echo Dot stuff, most of the HomeKit stuff is Echo compatible. Anyway, yeah, yes, 4.9 billion Echo Dots. If Apple wanted to spend all of its money on that, I'm guessing Tim's not going to do that though.
Probably not.
If Apple was going to look at rewarding its top employees, it could buy 61,268 of its top employees, each of them could get their own Koenigsegg. I'm not a supercar aficionado. Koenigsegg CCXR Trevita. This is a European supercar. It's got a top speed of 254 plus miles per hour. It'll do 0 to 62 miles per hour in 2.9 seconds.
You know, I'm not a car person per se, but did it just get hot in here?
Yeah. Imagine how much shorter Apple employee commutes could be if they were all driving one of these things. But no, never mind the fact that this company could never make that many cars. I mean, supercars are made in the tens and hundreds, not the tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they cost $4.8 million each, this car.
So can Apple could get the parking garage Apple would have to design so that their employees' cars didn't get stolen.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah. So anyway, 51,000 of these things. That's fun. If Apple was being a little more egalitarian,
mm-hmm.
Apple could just cut everyone in the United States a check for, you know, roughly $771.
That would be really nice too.
Apple could buy Dell 10 times over.
I think it would be funny if Apple bought Dell and then liquidated the company and gave the money back to the shareholders.
You can do it 10 times over.
Now you see, if you do it that many times, it's just getting spiteful.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I think it's possible the first time might've been a little spiteful.
Possibly. Yeah. Just a little.
So let's see here. Apple could probably should I even say it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you sure? Or should I say it?
Go ahead and do it.
Apple could probably pay for 10 of Trump's Mexico walls.
Yeah, they probably could.
Which, you know, Apple might as well do it because Mexico's not. But that's pretending that it actually only comes out at $25 billion because it's probably going to be $100 billion. Anyway, whatever. Apple could do that.
Either way, Apple could pay for the wall.
Apple could actually pay for the wall. Yes. You did some math too.
Yes, because I figured if I'm going to actually wrap my head around these numbers, I need to look at them from the perspective of things that interest me. So I went right to the LEGO webpage and checked out one of the kits that I love.
Okay.
Which is the Ghostbusters Ecto-1 car.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So it's a $59.99 kit. And by the way, it is a really fun build. And so if you do the math, that's like about 4.1 billion kits.
4.1 billion
right.
of these Lego kits.
So if you look at all the people on the planet, this is where it's either sad or really great. Because basically what it works out to is that every two people would have to share one kit.
Yeah. Oh.
So you don't get your own, but you get to experience the joy of sharing with a friend.
Oh, you know what everyone on the planet could have their own of, though?
What?
The Partridge Family Complete Series.
Oh.
Everybody could have their own copy of the Partridge Family Complete Series on DVD.
How's that go? Come on along, get happy. Is that right?
That's sort of like the pre-course.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yes,
that'd be kind of cool. Yes. There's a lot of fun episodes.
Well, so like, what if everybody was thirsty?
Oh, if everyone was thirsty, we could all head over to Starbucks, and Apple could buy each of us about 6 1/4 soy chais. You know, my favorite drink.
Okay, what if we didn't want to drink Phillips milk and magnesium?
Well, like that's too bad. This is what Apple's buying.
We're coffee.
I don't even know what this word is you're talking about.
Anyway, it's so much money. It's $246 billion. And Apple has returned, get this, $200 billion Apple has returned to shareholders. If Apple had not done that, Apple would have $446 billion in the bank.
That's insane. I've got this image in my head of all these people in a little village in Ghana looking at six full soy chais and then a partial cup of soy chai. And they're like, seriously, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah, I think it would make me a real jerk to laugh at that. I mean, I am a real jerk, but I think I would be demonstrating it to the world if I laughed at that joke.
Yeah.
So instead, I will just go, Jeff. I know. Yeah, it's just so much money. I mean, like $15 billion in one quarter, Apple returned to shareholders last year. And a lot of that, some of that's in dividends, but then the rest of it's going to be in stock buybacks, which is, again, why Apple had this increase in earnings per share.
I'm kind of disappointed.
Apple bought a lot of stock back.
Partridge family.
And excuse, yeah, I would love that actually. I would watch the crap out of that. Did you watch the Partridge Family when you were a kid?
Oh yeah.
Did you watch it in syndication or when it was live?
I don't recall. Well, I know I watched it in syndication. I don't recall if I was watching it when it was live as well.
Yeah, we would have been really young when it was live. We were still young when we were watching it in syndication, but that was like, you know, it was like the Brady Bunch followed by the Partridge Family on, you know, weekday afternoons.
Yeah, Gilligan's Island, Brady Bunch, Partridge Family.
Right. I Love Lucy would be like on at 11 a.m.
Yeah. So if we were home sick, we got to watch I Love Lucy also.
Yeah. I was lucky though, because Channel 39 in Dallas played Star Trek in syndication. The original.
Yeah. KWGN Channel 2 in Denver played Star Trek in syndication. So I got to watch that every afternoon.
Watch them over and over and over and over and over again. But I also watched all the Partridge Family episodes and all the Brady Bunch episodes.
Did Mr. Kincaid seem kind of sleazy to you?
Mr. Kincaid, I don't think he was necessarily always on the up and up.
Yeah, I don't think he was.
But he was doing his best to look after the interest of those crazy kids.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll accept that.
And he always had the eye patch. He would sleep with the eye patch.
Alexa, stop.
Good Lord.
Apparently, I need to teach my Echo to stop listening when we're recording, because she was starting to buy me something. I think she was actually about to buy the Partridge Family.
That's I don't want one of those things. Okay, anyway, so a lot of money Apple has, and Apple's returned a lot of money to shareholders. Apple makes so much money. It is fascinating how much money Apple makes, which makes it all the more fascinating why Apple can't put out new Macs.
And we've come full circle.
You know what we didn't talk about? We didn't even talk about iPads. I want to talk about iPads. So let's talk about iPads next week. Want to talk about, because Apple saw a 19% year-over-year decrease in the number of iPads sold.
All right. 19%. Not to be too pedantic, but you're actually talking about iPads now.
I know, but I want to talk about what that means.
Okay, well then we'll talk about that next week. Yeah.
And why we're seeing that. And because I personally love my iPad. Take it with me everywhere I go.
I love mine.
All of the places. If I walk down the stairs, I take it with me.
I bet you strut with it under your arm.
Maybe. BlueApron.com/ACM. They have been sponsoring us. We want you to show them some love. BlueApron.com/ACM. Try them out, man. I love this stuff. I love it.
It is pretty good. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've hit the point where I'm just going to have to push this button. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass by Boom recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
Hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. If the dysentery doesn't take us.
I feel bad for Matilda.
Yeah. She's gonna be lonely.